Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. We are live on Social Geek Radio on this lovely fall Wednesday night. This is AK Stout flying solo tonight from the unseasonably warm Baltimore. Deb is finishing up her leg at a very long journey that she's had over the past week, which I will tell you a bit about because we got to meet up and she's had some very exciting adventures. So, first, Deb started in Connecticut last Thursday, I believe, where she met up with our former Social Geek Radio co-host, BJ Emerson, and author of the very wonderful book, The Tasty Delight Way. And they met with the Engage One-to-One folks, Jack Munson and Jennifer McDonald, who we've had on the show before. And they also went to the Subway headquarters, I believe. And then on Sunday, Deb and I met with Jean, the CEO of the wonderful app Charity Miles, and a whole bunch of other people that we have either known or have never met in real life, and we've only met them online. And we met them in New York City, and we did an impromptu Charity Miles walk. So we walked approximately 5.5 to 6 miles, and we ran our Charity Miles app, and there was 15 of us, and we walked through Central Park, and it was a lot of fun. So if you are not familiar with the app to which I'm referring, go to charitymiles.org. You can download the app for your iPhone or your Android, and as you walk or run or bike, it will track your miles based on GPS. For each mile that you walk or run, 25 cents is donated to one of 11 charities. For each mile that you bike, 10 cents is donated to one of 11 charities of your choosing. So all you have to do is put in the physical effort, and then some very wonderful sponsor companies are putting in some monetary donation on your behalf. So if you do that type of exercise, why not? You might as well go download it. And also check out our Social Geek Radio Facebook page. It's fb.com/socialgeekradio. We have a very wonderful Charity Miles video that Paige Anderson put together for us, and that's going to be on our Facebook page tomorrow, so you can see a little bit about our journey while we were in New York. And then Deb's adventure continued on to D.C. on Monday, where she and I met up, and then we went to the Smart Brief offices, and we met up with Brooke Howell. If you guys are not familiar with Smart Brief, I highly recommend that you go to smartbrief.com. I'll summarize. It's a daily curation of articles and blog posts from across the web, broken into industry. And Brooke was telling us that they have over 200 smart briefs now. So in particular, I think you can imagine that my favorite one is Smart Brief on social media. There's also a Smart Brief for apps. There's one for location-based marketing. But it goes further than that into nutrition and construction and pretty much any industry that you can possibly imagine. So definitely check those out. And then Brooke and I actually went from the Smart Brief offices to the International Franchise Association offices, and we had a nice tour there, and we met with everybody. So we've had quite an adventure, and then Deb moved on to go visit her mom in Virginia. So she's on her way home tonight. But before I forget, I also wanted to let you guys know that due to Halloween coming up and being next week, we are not going to have a show next week. So our next Blog Talk Radio show will be the first Wednesday, which is the 7th of November. But if you're just dying to hear me talk next week, I will be doing a guest spot for Blog Talk Radio themselves for their Blog Talk Radio show that they have, and I'm going to be talking about blogging, and that's going to be next Tuesday, the 30th, at 1 p.m., and I'm sorry, I apologize, I don't have the link for that, but I imagine since it's Blog Talk Radio, if you go to the blogtalkradio.com website, it'll be pretty easy to find where their show lives. And I think that's all I have in terms of updates tonight. And I do want to get you guys thinking. Our topic for our show tonight is creating and cultivating brand ambassadors. And just to get you thinking a little bit before I introduce our guests, I found on a website that I frequent a really neat feature that I wanted to throw out there and suggest to everybody. The website is ZAG. It's ZAG.com, and they offer a whole bunch of products for mobile devices, cell phone cases, and they have a product called Invisible Shield, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, they have a whole bunch of gadgets for iPads, iPhones, whatever. But if you go to their website and you go to the very bottom, they have a whole section called Community that lives in the footer of their website. And besides having what you would expect in terms of Facebook and their blog and their Twitter, et cetera, they have two different sections, one that's called Twitter Accolades and one that's called Facebook Accolades. And if you go to each of those sites respectively, they basically have taken any compliments that they've gotten on Twitter and they have put those on a page, and likewise with Facebook. And I thought that was really cool. I haven't seen that termed in that manner and done that way on any other site. I thought it was really cool simply because I think the most recent statistic I read was that 80% of people trust peer recommendations over advertising, which, in my opinion, I would think that percentage would be a lot higher, that you're going to trust what somebody else is saying about a company that they've used versus what the company is saying about themselves. But regardless of the actual number in the statistic, I think it's just really cool that they have figured out that way to really pull together and showcase what other people are saying about them on the web. So if you're just looking for ideas on ways that you can do that within your own marketing on your own website, I don't see why you can't borrow that idea. So we're going to be thinking about that as we move into our topic. And our guest that we have this evening is Walt, and he is the chief marketing officer at a company local to me here in Baltimore called Social Toaster. And I won't spoil it. I will let Walt tell all about what Social Toaster is and what he does. But before I release Walt to speak to you guys, I just want to tell you how I met Walt. And that was a couple of weeks ago. I was speaking at a marketing meeting, and Walt was sitting next to me. And now I'm going to apologize to him on air because I remember that a mutual friend of ours that was sitting on the other side of him introduced us, and I had my head in my iPad, and I was, I'm sure, fervently finishing up my presentation, and I kind of said a quick hi and went right back to what I was doing, and I was very rude. So, Walt, publicly, I apologize for that. But anyway, I didn't really pay attention to where I heard that he worked for, or if I even heard him. And then we all went around the room, and we were introducing ourselves, and he said that he was the CMO of Social Toaster. Well, I have been following along with what Social Toaster has been doing for, I don't know, a couple of years now maybe. And again, I'll let him talk about what they actually do, but I've been participating in their programs. And when I heard that he was chief marketing officer there, I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm like sitting next to a celebrity. This is awesome. I love this company so much. So I didn't want to act like a super geek and, you know, talk to him right then and there and be like, how can we get you on the show? I love the company. I'm like a super Social Toaster stalker. Which I now learned is called something else, which, again, I will let Walt talk about. So I hadn't shared that story with Walt either. So, Walt, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for being here tonight.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate it. It's quite an honor to spend time with you and your fans and your followers, and I want to take just a brief moment and give a shout-out to friends and family and followers of my own and say thank you to everybody for taking some time out of your schedules and sitting and listening to us this evening. And No apologies are necessary. it was a pleasure to briefly meet you, and even though we didn't have much of a chance to talk that day, I'm glad that we've since established a friendship and been able to meet and spend some time together. I've greatly enjoyed everything that you stand for and your knowledge base and the expertise you bring to the industry, and above all else, the passion and the fervor that you have for social media, and quite frankly, your honesty and realness when it comes to your understanding of things and how social media works. So I got to thank you for that.
Well, I already liked you, but thanks. I really appreciate the compliment. All right. Well, now I will let you turn it into a little bit of the Walt show. And please tell us about yourself, where you come from, and what you're doing now, and just about Social Poster in general.
Okay. So brief background on Walt Rampatta. I started out in a completely non-related, non-technical industry when I graduated from college with a marketing degree. I went into the family business and worked building houses in Northern Maryland. Loved working with my hands, loved being able to see the finished product that was going to be around for years and years and years. And if there was gobs and gobs of money to be made building houses as a individual home builder, I probably would still be doing that today. In fact, it was about this time of year, I was sitting on a roof 30, 40 feet off the ground, and it started to sleet outside, and I mentally made a note in my head and said, what am I doing? I've got a fantastic college education. Why am I not using it more proactively? And it was at that point in time, I distinctly remember that day making the decision to finally utilize my college degree. And from there, got into sales and marketing, and it was around the turn of the bubble, the tech bubble, back in 1999. My brother, who is in the technology industry, pulled me into it and said, "Walt, I'm doing very well with this. It's lots of fun. Everybody's jumping on the bandwagon. If ever the time to get off the road, because I was traveling quite a bit back then, now is the time." And I went to work for a startup here in Baltimore with my brother. He was on the tech side. I was doing sales for them. And shortly thereafter, he and I had lunch together one day and said, "Well, why are we doing this for somebody else? You have the tech side. I've got the business side. Why aren't we? This is the time." And so in 1999, actually end of 98, my brother and I opened up a company here in Baltimore called Digital Organism. We were a web services, web dev shop that focused primarily on building websites and web applications and web solutions for, at the time, it was small businesses. And about 6 months into our company being founded, our website received Macromedia Shock Site of the Day, which back then was something to be very, very proud of. And it took us from, you know, a couple hundred hits on our website on a daily basis to a million plus.
Wow.
And immediately put us on the map. And the sales efforts that I was doing, going, you know, cold calling and networking and all that kind of fun stuff, very quickly changed into our phone ringing. And it wasn't just the company down the street. It was very large brands from across the United States and across the world that were calling us. And from there, our business completely changed. And hence, at that point, our roller coaster ride and the growth of our company happened. And so for about four and a half years, we rode the wave, enjoyed a lot of fun projects, a lot of fun clients. I had the opportunity to work with a lot of notable clients, Enron being a name that I'll drop. And yes, we did get paid. And we did. There's a very interesting story I'll tell you some other time about that. we did a lot of work with the music industry and the record labels, and established some great friendships that I have till this day, and a lot of really just fun brands. And then the the tech bubble started to fall apart, and everybody was scrambling to try and figure out what they were going to do next. And at that point in time, we integrated the company with an advertising agency here in Baltimore and sold off the assets. And so from there, I've stayed more on the marketing, the advertising side, helping organizations in the Mid-Atlantic build their digital arm of their business. And actually about 4 months ago, 5 months ago, I bumped into an old friend of mine, and that being the CEO of Social Toaster. And from there, we caught up and found out that there was a lot of common goals. We were in similar places with direction and things we wanted to be doing, and they needed somebody to help them with their marketing efforts, and hence I had the experience, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Well, very good. So with all of that, what exactly does Social Toaster do?
Social Toaster helps with a lot of the things that you were talking about at the very beginning of your show. We are a social marketing platform at a very simple level, if I was to boil it down. What we do is we help organizations engage their fans and followers. So in those instances, we are best suited to work with organizations that have somewhat of an existing fan base or an existing following. Typically on a daily basis, the organizations we are working with have somewhere between 10,000 and a million followers on Facebook, for example. We will help them cultivate those followers, figure out who has the biggest voice or is the most vocal about those particular brands, and through those people, mobilize them to become the megaphone for those brands and put the power into the hands of the followers to continually say great things about the brands that they follow.
Very good. Well, and I have to say, too, it's not just kind of, you know, from my experience in using it and being sort of one of those megaphones for the company, you know, it's not all just about touting how great the company is, but I also feel like I'm sharing valuable information that's coming out from each of the companies with my audience as well.
Correct. And that's and that kind of leads into a lot of the other things that we had kind of talked about discussing tonight. And really the value that the application, the software brings to first the company and secondarily the followers is the ability to connect those people in a meaningful fashion and keep them engaged with one another in a regular meaningful way.
Right. Now I just have to take a minute to brag that I haven't done that already. But I have participated, the Baltimore Ravens, if you've ever listened to this show, you guys know that I'm a huge Baltimore Ravens fan. And Baltimore Ravens use Social Toaster. We're called Ravens Rep when we push out information that the Ravens send out. And I would like to tell you all that I have won twice. I won once last year, and I've won once so far this year of having the most points for people clicking on my links. So I've won really cool Ravens prizes. So not just because I get cool stuff from the Ravens, but I also really like what the product itself stands for. But, well, to back up a second, well, not to back up, but to piggyback off of what you were saying when you were describing Social Toaster, you know, you mentioned sort of identifying who those brand ambassadors would be amongst the existing audience. Can you tell us a little bit about how you go about identifying those people specifically?
Sure, sure. So in working with these organizations, most of them have been on somewhat of a pilgrimage over the last few years to start with trying to figure out what is this social media thing and what do I do with it. Secondarily from that, they've been charged with building their follower base. And so many of these organizations have had goals to, for example, build a million followers on Facebook. And from that perspective, they've been able to achieve that through their own efforts and through promotions and thing and games and contests and things of that nature. But now what do they do with them? And how do they look at that subset of people and engage them to participate and to have a dialogue with them on a regular basis? So through those efforts, many times the organizations that we work with on a daily basis have been effective in recognizing who those vocal followers are. or vocal minority, as I like to call them, who they are. And there's a number of means that, are tried and true, tested means for being able to reach out and figure out who out of that subset is the most vocal. And typically that happens through more traditional, I would say, in some respects, marketing means, and contests are a fantastic fashion. Online contests, online promotions are a great way to not only initially engage or to build a follower base, but through that process recognize who is engaging in that contest most often, who is more often than not participating in the user-generated content aspects of that contest, and how often are they participating, who are they engaging with within their fan base or within their followers. And through that process, normally you can start to pick out a group of individuals who have the most fervor behind them and are the most enthusiastic about your efforts and what you're promoting and the brand itself.
Cool. I never thought about that. I didn't, because I do a lot of AK confessions tonight, but I am a huge contest junkie. So sometimes I do follow companies specifically to not just participate in the contest because I want to win something, and of course I want to win something because it's usually a product or service that they offer, so I like the company, but I am sort of like that person who's going and like tweeting a million times a day and that kind of stuff, and I would put myself in that category of being a brand ambassador for those different companies when I participate in it. So I like that. Very interesting viewpoint I never thought about before. So one thing I came to learn that I'm not necessarily a social poster stalker, but you guys like to refer to them as super fans, which I feel like is probably a nicer term than stalker. But it doesn't really mean stalker. It just means, you know, helping spread the word. Is there a difference between brand ambassadors and super fans, as you guys call them?
We tend to think so, for us, it's a little bit more than marketing terminology or terminology that goes along with the branding we've surrounded with the company. But super fans, in our opinion, are people that truly are the most passionate of the brand advocates or the brand ambassadors that people talk about so often in social media. You know, the holy grail of marketing is word-of-mouth marketing. To get somebody to physically endorse your brand and say, hey, I like Coca-Cola, for example, and I drink nothing but Coca-Cola on a daily basis, for that person to step out on that ledge and to, in essence, put their reputation on the line by standing behind your brand, that says a lot. And the super fans, in our opinion, are those people that are, they're willing to wear the T-shirt. They're willing to go to the games. They're willing to participate. And generally speaking, when we look at that group of people within the social media realm, they're not only the most vocal about the brands that they follow, but they also are the most followed among their friends as well. So the Ravens, for example, the ambassador base within the Ravens is very passionate about the team, is very passionate about the brand. They're very interested in getting that content that the Ravens are pushing out on a regular basis. And from that perspective, they also happen to have a fantastic following in and of themselves. The average Ravens rep fan has anywhere between 400 and 500 followers themselves. So these are not your typical online social media participants. These are people who, A, are passionate about the brand, but B, themselves have a significant number of people that they can influence behind them as well.
Right. I guess that is key into how that it's sort of a domino effect, I guess, almost. You have a lot of followers, and then they follow you, and so on and so forth. So I know a huge part of what happened is that the company, so again, we can use the Ravens as an example, had content to push out. And then, to myself as an ambassador, a Ravens rep, I get an email that says, you know, this content is going to go out. Do you want to send it to Facebook? Do you want to send it to Twitter, et cetera? So I'm assuming that a good part of getting people on board to want to share your content is actually having good content. So can you talk to us a little bit about maybe what the key is and if you have any sort of secret ingredient to this great content that a company would be sending out for people to be interested in? And of course, I know it'll vary upon industry, but maybe some sort of trends that you've seen along that way.
Yeah, and I really wish I could say that there was some mind-blowing secret to the content
right.
that really grabs people.
Darn, I was hoping you knew.
I think that we would be having different discussions if I knew that exact ingredient.
You'd probably be on my show.
Or we'd be doing it from Hawaii or something.
Right.
I think when it comes down to it, the things that we have seen that are that lead to success for the clients we deal with regularly is, A, that the content is not something necessarily that the brand is interested in per se, but is content that they recognize that their fans and the friends of their fans would be interested in. Because in pushing out content, the methodology or the thought process that goes into it is not just, hey, I want to say this great stuff about my company, especially when it comes to social media. When you get into a salesy, you know, standing at the top of the mountain and shouting how great you are type of scenario, more often than not, it tends to turn people away. But when you get into a scenario where you're taking a step back and saying to yourself, what are my fans interested in? And from that perspective, what do we think their friends, the friends of these fans, would be interested in? If you can figure that equation out, you've hit a home run. So it starts with going through that thought process. Secondarily, I think that and what we have seen that makes or leads to more success within that sector is the understanding that the person on the other end of the computer screen is a human being. And at
right.
the end of the day, people enjoy interacting with people that, for starters, interact with them. And with that, the people love to do things, be around, participate in things that they or people that they enjoy. So in essence, the secret sauce is trying to make friends online, recognizing that there is a human on the other end of that computer screen, and through that process, recognizing through that human interaction, humanizing, A, your brand, but humanizing the interactions from a perspective of if you can get these people to like you, through that process of them liking you, they're going to want to participate more often than not.
No,
so I wish I could say that there was some real technical wizardry behind it, but ultimately it comes down to two things. A, is the content that you're pushing out something of value not only to the fans of your brand, but also the friends of your the fans of your brand? And with that, are you creating an engaging and warm and welcoming process through that engagement? Are you making friends online? Are you actually participating in the conversation?
Right, absolutely. And I think one of the big obstacles that people are facing nowadays, especially with the Facebook page rank algorithm getting stricter and everything that's happening with that, I think one of the challenges is you might have great content and you might have that content that fans are interested in and their friends are interested in, but there's a challenge that just getting your content seen. You know, do you have any recommendations on, you know, how you can maybe heighten the likelihood of getting your content seen?
Yeah. So for starters, it comes in recognizing the value of the different social networks and the speed at which they work. And you and I talked about this a little bit the other day, but to bring it up in front of the radio audience, you know, Twitter is a fantastic tool. But the challenge with Twitter is that it moves so rapidly, especially if you have any significance in the number of organizations or individuals that you're following on Twitter. that stream is moving so rapidly that catching somebody or engaging somebody is challenging because of the limited window that you're operating in. So from that perspective, seeing the value in networks that, depending on the brand, have more staying power or longevity for the content when it's pushed out. So Facebook is fantastic because of the timeline moves much more slowly than it does on Twitter. The people that are watching the timeline and watching the interactions on Facebook, for example, are very much engaged with individuals and are hanging on what Sally is doing today and what's on her agenda and how she's participating in the social sphere. And from that perspective, when content is pushed out through the Facebook channels, it has a higher propensity to for people to see it, number one, but number two, to be interacted with because it's there longer. It is visible longer. And LinkedIn, MySpace, G+, they have similar staying power, but they all have their own demographics or types of people that interact with them on a daily basis, and they all have their own benefits. So I think really the to go around the barn to answer your question, the ultimate thing is recognizing the value of each of the different types of social networks that are out there and timing your content and utilizing those networks for the things that they can help you do the best. And the one thing we recommend to all of our clients is that when they really have something important to say, where they really want something acted upon, to choose a network that's going to have a longer or a higher longevity when it comes to the staying power of the content. More often than not, we're telling them to push to Facebook because the numbers and the masses are typically there around their fan bases. But with some of the more business-oriented brands, LinkedIn may be the answer specifically because of its business slant. So it all depends on where you're aiming.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think a lot of people sort of think, like, I'm just going to push out content, so I'll do the exact same thing on each channel, and, you know, it is what it is. Good luck, content, what you get out there. And so I think that is a really important point, that you really do have to tailor your strategy for the individual channels because of the different ways in which they work. So I have another, it might be a tricky question. I feel like all the questions I'm asking you are like the questions that if we all knew, we would all be like super millionaires. But it's a good basis for conversation. So let's say somebody comes to you and they say, I really want to use your product. I don't have a ton of fans or I don't have a ton of ambassadors right now. Do you have any recommendations on perhaps the quickest way or just a fast way in which somebody can sort of grow their super fan base in order to sort of take off and use some sort of program like Social Toaster?
Let's see how I can answer this. Number one, I don't know that it matters as much how many fans or followers you have. From that perspective, what really is the secret sauce is that those followers that you have are passionate about your brand and they are willing to engage on a daily basis. I read a recent study that was talking about specifically what matters more than anything nowadays, and people are starting to recognize this in the social sphere, is not so much the numbers, not the fact that you've got a million followers per se, but that out of those million followers, there's probably 30 or 40 fanatics about your brand. And those fanatics are the ones you really want to plug into and continue the conversation, the relationship with, because they're the ones that are going to shout the loudest when you have something great to say. So to answer your question, it doesn't matter so much per se, again, that you don't have a whole lot of followers to start with. Even starting out with a small number is valuable, especially if they are people that love your brand to death. So I think that's the key is first recognizing, hey, who are your biggest advocates? And a lot of times it starts indoors. It starts behind the company walls. The people that work for an organization are normally very passionate about the companies that they work for. And from that perspective, starting out even just with your employee base is a fantastic starting place. secondarily to that, the friends and the family of those employees are generally very supportive of the brands and the companies that their loved ones and friends are working for. So building that fan base organically, going through that process of connecting with the friends and family network, so to speak, is typically the quickest way to build, get the initial momentum. And from that perspective, building on the real key with social media in building a follower base is getting the ball rolling. Once the ball begins to roll, it almost takes on a life or a momentum of its own. And so that the toughest part about building any following is getting that initial push started.
Right.
Things like contests, things like promotions are always easy ways to get people engaged and do it on a relatively limited budget, especially when if you're a small organization, you don't have a whole lot of funds. Giving away things like T-shirts. People love T-shirts.
That's why I became a super fan of social media, because I wanted the super fan T-shirts.
So there are some really cost-effective ways that you can get that initial ball or that initial momentum moving. And once that needle begins to move, people will start to question, what's going on with this company? Why am I starting to see more and more about it? And as that bandwagon starts to move down the road, people begin to jump on it. It's just the natural propensity of people within the social sphere specifically, that when a trend starts, everybody starts to question what's going on, why are these friends of mine jumping on this bandwagon, what's so cool about this, and
right.
I really need to become a part of it. So it really is just a matter of getting that ball rolling.
And it's a great point that you brought up a couple minutes ago about getting your employees engaged in all of this. I think that is sometimes what I see in my own clients is very overlooked. I have companies that I work with where I'm pushing out content on their Facebook page for them, or they're pushing it out, and I know they have 20, 30 employees, and I'm like, why aren't these people coming and liking the content and resharing it? And, these are the people who, not just because you pay them to work for you, but, they work there. They should like the company. They should, believe in it and stand behind it and want to share that information. And I really do think that's a very untapped user base of people who, you can help facilitate that. So I'm really glad that you made that point.
There's one more point that I want to make on that as well, if I may. Typically,
sure.
when we work with organizations that have a limited following, we tend to engage organizations like Saying It Social and like AK Stout, people who have a global knowledge of social media and the theories and the practices and the understandings of how the social media mix plugs into and integrates effectively with the entire marketing mix, because let's not forget, marketing fundamentally has not changed. And so
right.
So too often people start to get out on this bandwagon thinking that social media is going to answer all their life woes and lead them to the promised land, when in fact it's just yet another tool in the subset of called marketing.
Right.
But having somebody like yourself who is involved and who can advise an organization as to how the social toaster specifically fits in as part of that tool set, that's generally when we have somebody who is really struggling to build that following base, we'll bring somebody like yourself into that mix, because by all means you have a higher level or a more global perspective on how to help or assist that organization.
And I think that's, in all of my talkings and doings and social media and everything with social media, I think, a lot of it just kind of falls on sort of a lack of, not even understanding, but sort of just a lack of opportunity to, understand a lot about this, which is, I think, why Deb and I love doing the show, why we do it so much, is to, really get people to understand and see the value in it. So I love doing this, but neither here nor there. Anyway, so I have another golden ticket question, and that is, let's talk, if we can briefly, just a little bit about the word engagement. And I know, again, what is the key to engagement is going to be one of those questions that we wish we all knew. But any tips on, you know, ways to perhaps get people to engage more?
What we have found through our own efforts is, again, going back to the fact that although we're utilizing technology to communicate, at the end of the day, we are communicating with human beings at the other end of the machine, and recognizing that people's time, for as busy as we all are, people's time is valuable. There are a number of different mindsets about incentivizing or adding some monetary, whether real or quantifiable, to the engagement process. We have found that engaging people through enticing them with prizing and adding a gamification aspect specifically to our platform really has increased the propensity of people to want to interact, A, because their time is valuable, but B, once you add gamification to something, it adds a fun layer to, and a competitive layer to increasing that engagement with the following and the fans. One of the things that we've done within our platform specifically is something similar to what a lot of other social media networks or platforms have added to their offering, which is badging. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. The human nature is people desire to complete tasks. For the longest time, when I first started out utilizing LinkedIn, you know, they have a progress bar in the top right of the LinkedIn page. And for the longest time, it said, you know, 50% complete and then 70% complete. And, you know, human nature was I wanted to complete my profile. I wanted to make sure I had that checked off. And, you know, it's not, you know, one of those bucket list items. It's not one of those major life to-dos. But your drive is to make sure the things that you're involved with, you're doing to the best of your ability and completing. It's just simply human nature. So adding that prizing element, specifically badging, to our platform has had wondrous effects when it comes to engaging and making it enjoyable for people to engage. And I think that's part of it as well. It's going back to that secret sauce. It's not just about humanizing your interaction and pushing out content that's valuable, but it's also about making it enjoyable. You know, people are devoting their personal time to connect with you and your brand. It shouldn't be arduous. It shouldn't be a job. It shouldn't be a to-do list. It should be fun. And so that's one of the things that we have found. Making it fun increases that engagement level significantly.
Well, yeah. I can totally attest to that. I mean, I have 88 badges on Foursquare, and I know that number off the top of my head, which should show you something. I don't know what it's showing you. You make your own judgments on that. But 88 badges on Foursquare, and people, you know, I will tell people that, even though I probably should keep that to myself. But I'll tell people that, and they're like, well, what does that get you? And I'm like, well, nothing, but I have 88 badges. and I'm like, no, that's important. That means something. So I'm totally get where you're coming from. I'm guilty as charged. But that brings me to one last question I want to ask you, and that's just that, you know, I was talking about being a Ravens rep and that, you know, if I had the most points for that month, then, you know, the Ravens send me Terrence Cody cleats, which I have behind me, and they're huge and they're awesome. But you know, is somebody really still an ambassador if you have to incentivize them, whether it's monetarily or maybe it's just with a badge, you know, or does that kind of skew the level of authenticity of a fan, or do you think that probably people would, I'm like, man, I'm pushing out information about the Ravens and I love the Ravens. I would like to say that I feel like I would push out the information whether there was a prize possibility or not. But do you have any takes on that?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question, and there's a lot of debates going on both sides of the fence as to the value of your following or your advocates if, in fact, they're being incentivized in any fashion. Is their opinion or their ability to stand behind your brand and advocate it is it skewed because of the fact that they're getting something for it? And you could probably spend an entire evening just on that one topic. And it goes, you know, and it's an, you know, age old challenge, specifically within the marketing realm, when it comes to third party endorsements. Are they truly third party endorsements if somebody's been paid for them? The challenge with social media specifically, and with this thing called the computer that takes up so much of our time nowadays, is I think far too often people forget that people's time is valuable. So in one way, shape, or form, rewarding your followers for their efforts, if they are passionate about your brand, does nothing more than, in our opinion, add value to their engagement and increase the likelihood that they're going to want to continue to be engaged with your brand. But again, I think it does start with the fact that they were interested in your brand even before you added that layer to the mix. And from that perspective, I must say that not all of our clients at Social Toaster actually add a pricing element specifically to their mix, and, or the pricing that they're offering has a non-monetary value to it. So I think it's important to understand that the real value in the following, the advocates, the ambassadors, the super fans, is their initial interest in that brand. It's their passion for wanting to stand behind that brand and be involved with it in the first place. What we're simply doing is making that process enjoyable for them, and additionally rewarding them for the time that they take to engage with it.
Well, if I can just promote Social Toaster for a minute, which I'm sure you'll let me do. The thing I like about it is that, you know, like we were saying with, you know, the Facebook algorithm and as fast as the Twitter feed is moving, that, of course, I use the Ravens again, but, you know, it's not that I don't have the time to necessarily, or I don't want to push out information that comes from the Ravens, but it could be that I just miss it. So I think where one of the big benefits of Social Toaster lies is the fact that, A, when the information comes to me, for me to authorize it to be pushed out through my social channels, I get to see the information because now it's coming to my inbox. But, you know, also now it's basically making it so much easier for me to share it because I don't have to go looking for it and I don't have to hope I see it in my news feed. It's information that I already want to share. It's just facilitating that process and making it so much easier for me to be able to do so. So it's one of my favorite things about it.
And that's one of the things that we've seen that has been a true competitive game changer for us specifically. People have seemed to have forgotten the original social media platform, which was email, and the value that it brings to the entire mix. Email, above all else, has the longest staying power because you control when it comes into your inbox, where it goes within your inbox, and when it leaves your inbox. So that puts more of the control in the hands of the fan, which is additional reason we feel that we have been having success is because not only are we helping the brands be able to put control into their hands and reach out to their fans and followers, but additionally we're putting control into the hands of the fans themselves and being able to control how that content is pushed out.
Very true. Well, I'm past my time, but I have one more question that I lied. I do have one more question that I want you to ask just because I know our audience, and I know we have a lot of franchisees and franchisors who listen to the show, and I know this is something that at Social Toaster you're just starting to move into, but so this applies to a large number of our audience. Do you have recommendations on how Social Toaster could help a franchise system?
Yeah, it's funny because we are at the cusp of getting engaged with a number of national franchises and having discussions with them about how to most effectively work within the confines of their customer base and their followers. And what we have found just through initial discussions is that engaging at the national level, at the national franchise level, and connecting each of the more regional or geographically local franchises through a national program seems to have the most merit, seems to have the most affordability for the individual franchisers. So the initial cost of entry to get into actually utilizing the platform is most effective in that fashion. But additionally, the ability to sway and gauge the following is most easy at the national level because of the masses that you're dealing with. Now, redirecting them to a local and having attention at a local level is something that we are looking to work together with the national franchises, and how do we specifically set up programs that either, A, drive coupons to the franchise down the street and participation and people wanting to drive up or utilize that franchise down the street. And that's kind of back office, you know, really geeking out type of computer stuff.
Right.
But from that perspective, you know, looking at things where we can have the most influence on a large scale and drive it through the funnel, the sales funnel, to the local level is the ultimate goal.
Very good. Well, Walt, thank you so much. I think we've gotten wonderful information for you, and hopefully all of our listeners are ready to go out and build their own little brand ambassador army, and hopefully maybe give a call out to you and see how that might work with Social Toaster. So for that to happen, we're going to need some contact information from you. So if you would tell everybody your Twitter handle, where they can find you, or Social Toaster, blog, website, whatever you would like to share with everybody.
Okay. Twitter handle is very simply at WRampata. That's WRAM as in Mary, P as in Peter, A, T as in Tom, A. Our corporate site is socialtoaster, all one word, .com. And through our site, you can find out how the platform works. You can sign up to become an ambassador. You can participate in any of the ambassador programs that we have for our clients. So we have a full listing of our clients on our site where you can sign up and become a super fan for the Ravens, Detroit Pistons, and you know, you pick a brand and your passion and sign up and become a fan. You can sign up to get a demo or find out more about the organization and how we operate on a daily basis.
Very good. Well, Walt, thank you again so much for being on the show tonight. And
thank you. I appreciate
that,
the honor.
Sure. And you're welcome to stay on the line if you want, or if you have to go, you're welcome to go. But I'm going to move into our Geek It Out segment. So let me see if I can find some Geek It Out music here. Nope, that's not it. All right, we're just going to have to go without the music, right into Geek It Out. So our Geek It Out sites that I have for you tonight. The first one, let's go with, this is a really geeky one. It's called Zemanta. It's ZEMANTA.com, Zemanta or Zemanta.com. I'll put that in the chat room. And the way that this works is it hooks up into your browser. So if you use multiple browsers, you're going to download it multiple times. But it is they call themselves a social blogging tool. So, for example, I used WordPress. So when I hook this up into my browser and I open my WordPress, it does a variety of things. While I'm writing a blog post, it will suggest other blog posts that are related to mine as I'm typing, so based on the words it picks up. So if I'm writing about Facebook business pages or something new that came out with Facebook, it's going to start searching for articles related to that. So I might use those to cite them as a resource. Something else that it does is after you're done your blog post, it suggests tags for you to use for your blog post to help with your search engine optimization. And it does a whole variety of other things. So it's a really good. Image suggestions is another one. So if you're looking for images to put in your blog post, not only does it search through and find images that you may want to add to your content, but it's already taken care of the issue of copyright, so that you know the images that it's finding are ones that you can freely use in your blog, and a couple of other things. So it's free to use. So if you are big into blogging and you want help with these various things and make it a lot easier for you, check out Zemanta. The next one that I have is called, let's see, okay, this was a really fun one. For all you shoppers out there, and as we're approaching the holiday season, this will be extremely helpful. It's called PromoFly. Actually, the website itself is called getpromofly.com. But GetPromoFly.com. GetPromoFly.com. And it's super easy to use. It actually gives you a little bookmarklet that you just drag up to your bookmark bar. And when you get to a website and you're checking out and you have that little box that says, enter a promo code. If you have a promo code, usually a little light bulb goes off. It's like, oh my gosh, there might be a coupon code or a promo code out there somewhere. You know, I can't make my purchase unless I go out and I look to see if I could save money somehow. So what this service aims to do is make that easier for you. So you get on the checkout page, you click the PromoFly bookmarklet, and it will search through and pull up any promo codes that there are active for that particular site, so that you can actually just click on it. It preloads into the promo code box on your checkout page, and boom, you just save some money. You can also click on it, and it will tell you if there are promo codes out there based on category, so you can go shopping and save money on all the various sites that it lists. So when you save money this holiday season, you can thank me and send me a gift. All right, the next one we have is called Zeebly. Zeebly is Z-E-E-B-L-Y, Zeebly.com. When you go to Zeebly, the only active service they have right now, they have one coming soon, but the one that we're going to talk about is called Social Me. And when you click on Social Me, you authorize it to link up to your Facebook, and it analyzes your Facebook use over the entire time that you've been on Facebook. So it'll search through all the posts that you've done. It'll search through all of your friends. And it basically pulls in a whole bunch of data. So it'll tell you words that you talk about most frequently. It'll give you some sort of sentiment analysis. And I have used programs similarly to this before. We've talked about on the show, the Wolfram has a Facebook data system. But actually, of all the ones that I've used before, I really like this one the most. And it's not for business pages right now. It's only for your personal profile. But it really gives you some good insight. If you think you're a mostly positive person and you turn this on and it says that you're not, then maybe you'll rethink what you're posting on Facebook here and there. But it really is some good insight. So go to Zeebly.com and hook up Social Me. And then the last one, I think I have 1 minute left to tell you guys about this one. This is called Chirpify.com, Chirpify.com. And this is the ability to sell items or to do fundraising in stream on Twitter or Instagram. You hook up an account through Chirpify. It'll tell you exactly what you post. And then people can also create a Chirpify account. It hooks up to PayPal. And when they see something that somebody has posted via Chirpify, they can literally type in buy in reply to a tweet or to something on Instagram, and they can purchase it right there without having to do a whole bunch of clicks or go to a whole bunch of other screens. So if you sell or you fundraise and you want to do it through Twitter, Instagram, check out Chirpify.com. And with that, the operator is telling me I only have 60 seconds. So I want to remind everybody that we have no show next week because you'll all be out trick-or-treating. So have a happy Halloween. And you can always find out information about us on Facebook at facebook.com/socialgeekradio. And I want to thank Walt one more time for being our guest tonight. And I hope everybody goes and checks out Social Toaster. And with that, I will talk to everybody in 2 weeks. And thank you very much for listening to the show tonight.